This is Jack Leffler. Life originated in its simplest form, on our tiny planet at least, over 3 billion 500 million years ago, or so evidence suggests. However, somewhere around 540 million years ago, there was a true explosion of life, which resulted in what biologist Edward O. Wilson called the Big Bang of animal evolution. Over the next 475 million years, ever-evolving life forms burgeoned the delicate biosphere in great spasms of abundance, only to be thwarted by major episodes of extinction wrought by volcanic activity or inundations of asteroids, which resulted in tremendous rents in the fabric of biodiversity. The last major episode of extinction occurred about 65 million years ago, when the age of dinosaurs came to an end. Since that time, mammals have come into their own, and, through accident or predilection, our own species has come to exist, perchance to recognize the spirit of place. Alvin Josephy is one of America's most eminent historians. He addresses the coming of early man to the Western Hemisphere.
It now looks pretty much as if man began to come, if he hadn't already come, around 35 or 40,000 years ago. Well, now, just at that time, Neanderthal man still existed in Eurasia, and Cro-Magnon man, the successor of the Neanderthal man, also existed. He was coming into more and more prominence. The two were still on Earth. The Neanderthal man was still on Earth. Now, that was a very early period, a very old period, and there's no evidence that Neanderthal man got here. In fact, Cro-Magnon man was more developed. He had learned how to make a higher stage of tools and weapons and so forth, rocks. He was more advanced technologically than the Neanderthal man, and that's why he, perhaps one of the reasons why he persisted and Neanderthal man died out. He also, with his more advanced abilities and knowledge, was able to expand, to migrate into areas where no man had been before, or is known to have been before, into the less hospitable parts of the world, the colder regions, and got up into Siberia and was able to venture across what was then the Bering so-called land bridge when it appeared, and Cro-Magnon man, Homo sapiens sapiens, got across into the New World, it looks like about 35, 40,000 years ago. Now, who those people were, we don't quite know. They came from Asia somewhere, and probably in small groups they began their expansion over the two Americas, and been the oldest, the ancestors, or the oldest ancestors of American Indians in the Western Hemisphere.
The Columbia Plateau extends between the Northern Rockies and the Cascade Mountains. Geophysically, it was formed by the spread of dark volcanic lava. It provides the watershed for the Snake and Columbia River systems, which join and flow westward, emptying into the Pacific Ocean. Many cultures have been sustained by this landscape and the rivers which nurture it. Miley Lawyer is a Nez Perce woman whose sense of cultural antiquity is preserved in the lore of her people.
Coyote was coming up the river. There's always stories of coyote going up the river and coyote going down the river. Different things happened to him, going up and coming down. And he was going up the river because he was going to go to buffalo country. And it was cold, and the river was frozen, and there was ice every place. So that would indicate kind of like an ice age. And he walked along, and he took a step, and there was a frozen deer horn or antler sticking out of the ice, and he stepped in it, and it hurt him. So he went limping along, and he saw these shelters along the side of the river on the bank. So he went up there, and there was this girl and family, and he told them what was wrong, and she said, "I'll fix it for you." So she fixed his foot, And he said, oh, let me be a handsome man. So he turned into a real good-looking young man, and he was going to try to marry this woman. But her grandmother told him, that's Coyote. Be careful, that's Coyote. Anyway, it's a long, long story, you know, of them going up there. But what fascinated me always, it starts out, it was cold, and there was ice every place, and that river was frozen, and Coyote stepped on this deer horn that was sticking out of the ice. And to me, that always means that it must have been a long, long time ago when there was a lot of ice here.
Alan Pinkham, a Nez Perce naturalist, and Pat Courtney Gold, a Wasco basket weaver, address the difficulties which face Indian peoples who have been relocated from their tribal habitats, where formerly abundant species have now been all but eradicated.
Well, a lot of tribes have been lost, or their identity has been lost, because they've been absorbed into other tribes. There's something like well over 40 tribes in the Columbia River Basin. Some of those are lost, and some are onto reservations now, and they're called a group, like the Colville Reservation. You know, they have about 14 different bands of tribes, and I can't name them all, but then you go to the Yakima Reservation, there's another 14 bands, I think, on the Yakima Reservation. After the treaty times, after 1871, when they said they were not going to have any more treaties, they created executive order reservations. And some of our people that were Nez Perce went to these other reservations and absorbed into another reservation, but they were, you know, very closely related to us. But they all depended upon the river system, and you know, like the Palouse people, the Cayuse, Umatillas, Warm Springs people, Klickitats, Chinook, you know, all the way down to the mouth of Columbia, Siletz people, in Oregon. And I think they have the same value as we do. You know, some have changed dramatically because they don't have a land base. It's hard to have a culture without a land base. And that's what a lot of tribes are trying to do, get a land base, so then they can restore their culture and some of their cultural practices. And we have done fairly well, but not perfect. You know, and I don't think we'll ever get back to our traditional way of living, because that is completely different kind of lifestyle than what we're in right now. And besides, some of the resources that we relied on aren't there anymore. And this is the other thing I'm working with the Forest Service, is restoring some of those species that we relied on so we can take up our traditional practices again. You know, there's a few people that do that now, but not as a tribal entity do we do it, because of some of those resources are just not there. So that's another way of bringing back cultural practices. You got to have the species there and the habitat there to do that. You know, if you bring back the anadromous fish, you bring back the gray wolf, the grizzly bear, peregrine falcon, and all those species, that's bringing back those things that we valued in those old days. So without that occurring, then our lifestyle is going to be changed dramatically, and some of it may be lost. But it's another way of preserving culture, is to preserve species.
Our legends are based on rock formations, because the basalt rock was all volcanic. So there were different designs from the hot lava. Then the rock formations define certain images. So a lot of our legends were based on those images. Since the dams were built, it's all gone. Salila Falls is gone, and all the rock formations are gone. So our legends that were tied to these have meaning to me, because I can remember that. But the younger generation, they can't tie it to those visual memories. They can hear the songs and the legends, but they can't tie them to our physical culture, to our location, to a land base. I think that might be one of the problems, is they don't have that strong tie.
There's a monument up here. It's called the Heart of the Monster. It's up the Clearwater River here a ways, about 60 miles. Coyote was beckoned one time. Another animal came to him and says, there's a big monster up the Kamiyai Valley devouring all the animal people. This is before human beings have come about. And Coyote said, well, I'll go up and see what I need to do to this monster. And so he got ready, got his little bag, and he got pitch and soot, and he got flint for knives, and he got a rope, and so he went And he would holler at the monster. He says, I hear you're devouring all the people. He says, all the animal people. He says, you can't devour me because I'm not going to let you. So he'd tease the monster. Then finally the monster raised his head up above the prairie and looked at Coyote. He was on the other side of the prairie there. And so they talked, you know, back and forth, and Coyote just teased him. And then finally the monster says, I'm going to suck you in my belly. And Coyote tied himself to the mountain. And the monster tried to suck him in. And Coyote just come to the end of his rope. He'd just stay there. The monster kept trying to suck him in. Finally, Coyote says, well, I'm going to go in. So he takes out one of his knives and he cuts the rope and goes into the monster's mouth. And he gets inside and he sees all the animal people. Some are just bones and some are dying and some are still, you know, alive and want to get out. And so he told all the animal people, I'm here to save you, and I'm going to kill this monster. And then the grizzly bear growled at him. Coyote said, what are you growling at me for? He said, I come here to save you, to get you out of here. And the grizzly bear growled at him again, and so Coyote pushed him with his hand and pushed his nose. And so that's why the grizzly bear has a flat nose. Then he walked on further, and then the rattlesnake rattled at him. He said, well, what are you rattling at me for? I come here to save you. Rattlesnake rattled again, so Coyote stepped on his head. And that's why rattlesnake has a flat head here. And finally he says, well, I'm going to cut this heart down. I'm going to melt all this fat. And he built a fire, and then he started cutting the heart loose. And he'd cut, and one of his knives would break, so he'd get out another knife, and he kept cutting. And finally, the last strand of flesh was keeping the heart on. And he says, and he told the animal people, get ready to get out of here. Go to all the holes in the body, you know, the nose, the mouth, the ears, and the hole under the tail. As you all wait there, because when this monster takes his last breath, that all these holes will open, then it'll close, and you'll never get out. So he says, here, I'm going to cut this last piece, so get ready. So he cuts it, and the heart falls, and then the monster takes his last breath, and all the animals run out. All except Muskrat. He was just too slow. He was running out of the hole underneath the tail. And on that last breath, that hole closed up on his tail and stripped all the hair off it. So that's why Muskrat only has just a little bit of hair on his tail. He got it all stripped off when he got run out of there. And then Coyote, he got out, and then he said, well, what am I going to do with this monster? He said, well, I'm going to create the human beings. And so he'd cut body part off and he'd throw it in a direction to the east, and, you know, and he created the tribes, you know, the Salish Kootenays, Sioux, the Cheyenne, the Shoshone Bannocks, and Yakimas, and all the way around up north, you know, he'd throw these body parts, and he'd, when they struck the ground, and the human beings would be created then. And then he finally got done, and he says, well, there's no human being right here. I'll have to create people here. A nice, beautiful valley, a nice place to be. So he wiped his hands with the blood. And as those drops of blood struck the earth, people sprung up. And these were Nez Perce. And he says, these people will be strong people, kind people, able to live with their neighbors, you know, good human beings. So this is where they'll be, right here. And he said, well, I'll need to mark this place. So he took the heart and he put it in the ground there, and it looks like a heart, in the nice round hill. It's about 80, 90 feet high. Then there was a liver also. He put the liver over there, and he laid it there, and he says, I'll leave this here as a landmark so people will know that the Ninipu, Nez Perce, were created right here. And this will mark the site of the creation of Nez Perce. So that's the story.
According to legend, there was a time when animals could speak between themselves. The interaction between humans and other species in the folktales of the Indian peoples provides great insight into the minds of those who perceive themselves as part of the greater biotic community, rather than separate, as do those of us whose folk wisdom is founded in the need to dominate the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Among many Indian peoples, the influence of coyote was boundless. Ed Edmo and Sophie George recall stories from their childhood.
Coyote was the great inventor type thing. He always, whatever coyote wanted to do, it happened. Coyote, he says, boy, I sure like to be with these two young swallow girls. They're sure pretty. I like to have them hug me and kiss me. It'd really be nice. So he says, I'm going to change myself into a baby. So he changed himself to a little baby and got into this little basket, went down the river in the basket, crying like a little baby. And these two swallow girls saw him. Boy, they picked this little baby up. Look at this cute little baby. Sure crying. There's other swallow girls. No, don't touch that baby. She says, why? That's coyote. No, she says, yeah. And took the blanket off. And here he says, see his partner. He had his pubic hair and everything else. He said, changed himself, but he couldn't change his partner.
There was this beautiful meadow. And this young girl was walking by in a coyote. He stopped the young lady and he said, you know, there's a beautiful flower out in the meadow. He said, it's red. He said, when you see this flower, you sit on this flower. And this young girl never experienced life. So when she was walking along, the coyote had left her and she seen this beautiful flower. And she sat on it like the coyote told her. And then Grandma says, and you know what happened? And I says, what? And she says, she had a baby. And I used to wonder, growing up, I think, what kind of flower did she sit on? And it wasn't until I got married that I understood the story. Well, what the thing of it was is I never knew by Grandma telling these stories that it was preparing us for life. I used to always be scared of red flowers because I thought, how do I have a baby?
Porcupine wanted to get a buffalo, a little porcupine. And he says, you know, I'm going to go hunt buffalo. And there's no buffalo right around this area, but he had to go out to hunt the buffalo. So he's sitting there one day, sharpening his quills, stick it back, get another one, sharpen it, stick it back, get another one, stick it back. And then, what you doing, porcupine? I'm going to go hunt buffalo. Well, where are you going to go? I'm going to go out towards Montana way and find me a buffalo. So he took off. He's going down the road, this little porcupine. He's walking down the road, and all of a sudden he's seen a buffalo chip. Hey, he stopped and looked at that buffalo chip. He said, gee, buffalo chip, how long you been here? He said, I've been here a month, buffalo chip said. At least I'm on the right track. You've been here a month. Which way did they go? They went that way. Okay, so old porcupine, he takes off that way. Way he goes. Pretty soon he runs into another buffalo chip. Buffalo chip, how long you been here? Buffalo queued up, they call it. Oh, I've been here about 2 weeks. He said, oh, good. Which way did they go? They went that way, the buffalo chip said. See, he's got no hands. He went that way. So he's okay, the way he goes. Then every time he see a buffalo chip, he asks the buffalo chip, how long the buffalo been left? You know, 2 weeks, 1 week. They got there one day, and he says, hey, where's this buffalo chip? Looks pretty good. He was steaming hot. No porcupine, he touched it. Hey, it's still warm, he said. Hey, buffalo chip, how long you been here? He says, they just left me. He says, where'd they go? They're across the river, over there. So porcupine, he goes down by the river, and he sees the buffalo all over standing, all these buffalo standing. I wish I could get across the river. So he yells, hey, buffalo, come help me cross the river. And this old skinny buffalo says, oh, you want me to help you? No, I don't want you. I want that fat one over there. Another one hollered, I'll help you. No, I want that fat one there. So that fat one says, you want some help? He says, yeah, I'll help you. So the buffalo, he walks across the river. He says, okay, porcupine, jump on my back. I'll give you a ride across. He says, no. He says, them flies, you shake your fly, I'll fall off and drown. Well, how can I get you across? He says, swallow me. Okay, so the buffalo, he swallowed him. So the way he goes, and the porcupine says, buffalo, how far are we? He says, I just started across the river. And he's in there just sitting there in the stomach. He says, how far are we now, buffalo? He says, I'm about in the middle. Okay, the porcupine, he waited and waited. He says, well, how far are we now? He says, oh, I'm about ready to get out. And he sat there. He said, well, how far are we? He said, I'm just getting out of the water now. The little porcupine, he sat there. He said, how far are we at now? He says, I just got out. I'm ready to get on the land. He waited for a while. He said, how far are we now? He said, I'm on the land now. So the old porcupine, he just shook himself all over, and all those quills went into the stomach and killed him. And he crawled out of his mouth, and he had his buffalo. That's how he gets his buffalo. That's an old story. I heard that when I was a little kid. I heard that. When the buffalo chip talks and he points with his lips. Then, you know, your old people, old Indians, when they point, they do that. You ever notice that? Long time ago, years ago, way back when the animals used to talk, they had possum. Possum had a great, big, humongous, fluffy tail. And he'd really flaunt that tail around. He'd go to the dances and dance and always showed his fluffy tail. And he'd say, look at my beautiful, marvelous, fluffy tail. And he'd brag about that tail and he'd swish it around. People got so worried, they didn't like to see him because he'd brag so much about his tail. And he was a pretty animal. Boy, he'd go to these dances and he'd shake himself. He'd look at my marvelous, beautiful, fluffy tail. So later on, during this one powwow they had, he was in there showing off. These people says, well, morning, when he gets tired, he'll go to sleep. We'll fix him. So early in the morning, he got tired, laid down, went to sleep. And they called the Indian doctor to come down. He says, we'll fix him. So he said magic words to him and took his tail and looked after his tail. Put some, like, a clay type thing on his tail all the way down the end. He had a long tail, just like a rat tail. And he said, well, we'll fix his nose, too. So they said magic words to his face, and his nose got funny, so he wouldn't be handsome. So there he was. And he woke up that morning, the old possum, he got up. Here he had that nose and the big, long, skinny tail, and he go out there and started dancing, showing off his old, beautiful, marvelous, fluffy tail. He's dancing, looked down, and there's this big old stick sticking out, his old tail. He saw that, and boy, he got ashamed. He took off, and when he took off, he'd look back and see if anybody's watching him. And if somebody come to him, he'd fall down, pretend like he was asleep. That's how possums are today. That's how a possum got to be.
Jamie Pinkham is a member of the Nez Perce Tribal Council. He is greatly concerned about continued impoverishment of habitat due to industrial pollution and the short-sightedness of federal agencies. He believes, as do many Indian people, that nature thrown out of balance can only result in disaster.
If we think in terms of the natural environment, I think the greatest concern is the loss of species. We're losing some diversity and some balance in the ecosystem. Probably the most notably would be the salmon. Now, on the heels of the salmon, we're looking at the steelhead, the declining runs of steelhead in this country. And it's important to these communities because of physical sustenance, but also when we look at those species, there's the spiritual sustenance that they provide. Our activities reflected our understanding of the changes in the land, the changes in the water, and we knew where to move when it was time, for example, to harvest salmon. It wasn't just a harvesting experience, but it was also a spiritual experience because the celebration and the honoring, giving thanks to nature and the Creator for these gifts. The spiritual part of it also is important to a healthy community. So the health of the community is dependent upon a healthy nature and spiritual health as well. I think the tribe's been working hard in their efforts to restore the fisheries to this area, but it's a difficult task. You look at the changes in the river. A gentleman once told me that when you change the river, you change the fish. When you change the fish, you change Indian people. And you could look at the changes to our community with time, changes in our eating habits, changes in our livelihood, whereas we used to gather for these celebrations to honor the salmon, the return of the salmon. We're losing that cause to celebrate because the runs aren't as plentiful as they once were. People are beginning to look at other means or other sources of food. And that does concern me because we used to come together in these kinds of celebrations, and we need to keep working to restore these fish runs so we'll continue to have reason to celebrate, but I guess more importantly, help our children find reason in their future to celebrate too. And I think our efforts don't stop just at the fisheries, but we can look at what the Nez Perce tribe has been doing in reintroduction of other species, protecting habitat for other species that's important to us. For example, the tribe has taken a leadership role in the reintroduction of the gray wolf to most of north central Idaho. In addition, we're working closely with federal and state agencies on protecting habitat for white-tailed deer and for elk and trying to protect the bighorn sheep populations within our treaty area. It extends around more than just the river system itself, but into the habitat, the upper drainages of the river system. And we always see that the tie, that the reason that we want to protect that environment, because it does create a healthy physically and spiritual community for the Nez Perce.
The men were coming back to the camp after hunting, and this young boy was in camp, and he was told, "You go take these horses back to the pasture." So the boy did what he was told. He took the horses and put them in the pasture. And then when he was out there, it started snowing, and he became lost because his tracks were covered up. And so he was wandering around there trying to find his way back to the camp. And he finally stopped, and saw he had snow all the way around him. He couldn't find his way. And so he stopped, and he looked back towards the backside of him, and he seen five men coming. And he walked right by him, and the last man said, "Come with me." So the young boy said, "Oh, they must know where they're going." So he started following the five men. And so he followed them, and then he came to his camp. And they said, "Well, there's your camp right over there." He says, "You go on down there." So he said, "Well, okay." So he went down towards camp, and he looked back. And those five men turned into five wolves. So the five wolves showed him his way back to his camp, and then they left him and went on their way. So that's the spiritual connection we have with species. And wolves is one of them.
Oral tradition is the foundation of cultural preservation. Miley Lawyer recalls the circumstances when her great-grandfather was the first of the Nez Perce people to actually observe the coming of the Lewis and Clark expedition to the Nez Perce homeland in 1805.
Great-grandfather. Twisted Hair was up at Weipe with the Indians. They were digging a camas. He was a little boy about 9 or 10 years old, and he's the first one that saw the Lewis and Clark expedition. He and his two companions, they were named Wachamnus and Tiplanatsitskan, and they said, "What'll we do?" They thought it was buffalo. "Well, we got no buffalo in this country." And they sneaked up through the bushes, and they saw these people with a lot of hair on their faces. So he said, "We better go back." So they run back to Twisted Hair's teepee, and he told them. And Twisted Hair sent them around to the different camps. "You go over there to Red Bear. You go over there to the different camps and tell them to come, because we got to have a meeting quick." And the chiefs come, and they decided, "What do we do? Shall we kill them?" They said, "Yeah, let's kill them, and we'll throw them in the river." These little boys, three of them, were watching, and they listened to all of it. A lawyer told his wife, "We laid on our bellies, you know, in the hot weather, they roll up their teepees." And he said, "We laid on our bellies and listened to them talk about what they were going to do." So they decided what they'd be ready for them. And, of course, when they saw them, why, Lewis come up with ribbons or something, you know, he thought that they'd be crazy about it. But he's the first one that saw Lewis and Clark.
Featured on this episode of The Spirit of Place have been Alvin Josephi, Miley Lawyer, Alan Pinkham, Pat Courtney Gold, Ed Edmo, Sophie George, Jamie Pinkham, and the voices of other species who live within the watershed of the Columbia Plateau. This 13-part radio series was produced for the Western States Arts Federation in association with KUNM-FM Albuquerque by Jack Leffler and Elaine Thatcher. Funding for this series was provided by the Ruth Mott Fund, the New Mexico Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Utney Reader Magazine, offering thought-provoking points of view on culture and society from over 2,000 media sources. Please visit Utney Reader on the World Wide Web at utney.com. That's www.utne.com. This is Jack Leffler inviting you to remain attuned to the spirit of place. Thank you for listening.